It took 5 years to arrest a suspect, a man it turns out had been interviewed by police right at the beginning of their investigation. His defense has tried to say that a pagan cult is really behind the killings, but the suspect himself has confessed over 60 times. Who will the jury believe? This is the story of the most interesting and sometimes shocking things to come out of the Delphi murder trial so far. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. I'm sick this week and I probably sound all stuffed up, but I still wanted to make a video because Richard Allen is on trial right now for the Delphi murders of Abby Williams and Libby German. And you might know that I have just a, you know, light interest in seeing justice done in that case. The two teenagers, 13 and 14 years old, were walking along the Monon High Bridge in Carroll County, Indiana on February 13, 2017, when they made a Snapchat recording of the man who suspected of killing them soon after.
This is breaking news from Channel 13 Eyewitness.
There's still people out looking, but it has been scaled back. Let me just put it that way.
After nearly a day of searching, a small town community's hope turns to heartbreak. The search for two missing 13-year-old girls leads police to two bodies.
Their bodies were found on the bank of Deer Creek the next day, their throats cut multiple times. More than 5 years later, a 50-year-old local, Richard Allen, was charged with their murders based on a gun he owned and his own admission that he was on the trail that day. Although he's confessed many times from the prison where he was being held before trial, his lawyers say he had a psychological breakdown and didn't know what he was doing. His trial began on October 18, 2024, and here are the things so far that have really stood out to me. One, the county prosecutor filed a motion asking that the sketches of the suspect or suspects be kept from the trial, saying that they might confuse or mislead the jury. The original sketch, released in July 2017, was a composite based on multiple eyewitness accounts of a man seen hiking on the trail that day. For nearly 2 years, this was the man people were supposed to be looking out for. But then in July 2019, police released a new sketch of what looked like a completely different person and said they were going in a new direction. So the prosecutor was thinking Richard Allen's defense might say, look, he couldn't have committed the crime because that's not him in the sketch. Now, I partly feel like the jury should probably have all of the information available to them and law enforcement could explain why the sketches look so different up on the stand. But it also makes sense to me that if the sketches weren't used to identify Allen, they don't have much to do with his trial. And they were not, in fact, used to identify Allen. So the judge agreed that they should be kept out of the trial. Two, people are noting that the prosecutor's opening statement only lasted 15 minutes, which you can either take as him not having very much evidence to talk about, or that the evidence is so clear that he didn't need to try to sell it to anyone. Anyway, pardon me for being graphic, but he said that Libby was found covered in blood on her neck and face from the fatal wound to her throat and was naked. Abby, meanwhile, had been dressed in some of Libby's clothes, her dark blue sweatshirt and jeans. Abby's clothes were left elsewhere in the creek. Allen, of course, has confessed to the murders over 60 times, mostly in calls to his wife and mom, and one of his confessions allegedly included that he killed the girls with a box cutter. Although I'll note that he's also supposedly confessed to things he definitely didn't do, like killing his grandchildren. But some people say his defense could have coached him to admit to those fake things later to cast doubt on his earlier confessions. Like, he told them he admitted to the murders of the girls, so his defense team said, okay, let's have you admit to some other stuff just so people will think you're crazy. The prosecution has said, though, that Allen confessed to things only the killer would know, but we have yet to hear any specifics. A reporter recreated one of Allen's confession letters from 2023 that they were allowed to view, but it's very generic. It's still very chilling to me, though. Three, Allen's defense attorney says the state's timeline doesn't make sense. Allen admits to being on the trail that day when the girls were there, wearing the same clothes the killer was wearing. But his counsel says he left around 1:30 p.m., meaning he would have been gone before the girls were taken at around 2:15. They also say that Libby's phone and its Harry Potter case pinged a cell tower at 4:33 a.m. the next day when Alan was allegedly at home. So in order for the phone to ping in that early morning hour, someone else must have turned it on. Their theory is that someone abducted the girls from the trail system and then brought them back early in the morning when the coast was clear, and I guess turned on Libby's phone for some reason? The logic doesn't quite work out for me. But one of the jurors asked in a note to the judge if the ground under Abby was disturbed, like you might expect it to be if she was undressed and then dressed in Libby's clothes there. A crime scene investigator said it did not appear to have been disturbed. For the big trial reveal from the defense was the idea of this hair found in Abby's hand that didn't belong to Alan. Like the implication being, if it was someone else's hair, that must mean Alan isn't the killer. But it turns out the hair belonged to a woman, likely related to Libby. Not that a female relative couldn't have killed the girls, but it feels more likely to me that it came from Libby's clothes or Libby's sister who gave them a ride to the trail. Alan's defense says more testing should be done. 5, the defense has asked the court to block anyone from testifying about what can be heard in the video infamously capturing Bridge Guy following Abby and Libby. They say one can only speculate about what's being heard, like the well-known Guys Down the Hill snippet that was released to the public in an attempt to find the killer. Alan's attorneys say that speculation about the words and sounds in the video could be confusing and misleading to the jury.
Guys.
The jury was shown about 40 seconds of the video Libby recorded of Abby on the bridge with the killer behind her. At one point, she seems to timidly say hi to Bridge Guy, which just seems so sweet and Midwestern to me. The judge didn't make it clear if she would allow anyone to testify about what was said in the recording, like the down-the-hill portion or the part where Libby seemingly points out the gun the man has. Many people believe it's a gun that helped the small-statured Alan control the two girls. And of course, the prosecution says a bullet cycled through a gun belonging to Alan was later recovered at the scene. A crime scene investigator said that caliber of handgun isn't common and called the unspent round a magic bullet. Alan's defenders have said that local police also carry that type of gun, but at trial, authorities said they either didn't have their weapons or carried a different caliber while at the crime scene, so it wasn't their bullet. 6, this investigator also said that there's no DNA evidence that directly links Alan to the crime scene. There's actually no DNA evidence linking anyone to the crime scene. There was also never an attempt to gather fingerprints from the brush covering up the girls' bodies, which I know seems unbelievable to some people. However, the investigator testified that the sticks and branches around the girls had dirt on them and wouldn't work for fingerprinting. It also doesn't help that the sticks were left in the woods for more than 2 weeks before someone decided they were worth collecting as evidence. A state policeman said they didn't think it was important to take the branches because they'd never gotten DNA off of a rough, crumbly surface like that before. 7, at one point in the trial, someone pushed the wrong button and accidentally showed a crime scene photo of a close-up of Libby's face on a projector screen before the prosecution had a chance to warn people about what was to come. Family members and jury members in the courtroom gasped. The Daily Mail reports that Alan hugged himself and kneaded his fingers into his arms repetitively as the crime scene photos were shown, an act they characterized as self-soothing and called shocking behavior. 8, Alan's defense team is once again trying to bring the pagan cult theory back into the trial. On the 4th day of trial, a state police crime scene investigator testified that sticks placed over Libby's and Abby's bodies seemed like an attempt to conceal them, but that the girls weren't completely covered. The defense has taken this as an opportunity to claim that now they have an opening to bring up the paganism explanation at trial. The judge previously ruled that the jury wouldn't be allowed to hear this angle, but they're asking her to reconsider. The defense says the sticks were arranged over the girls in a pattern that suggests a rune or an ancient spiritual symbol. They claim that by not being able to bring up the possibility that the girls were killed as part of a ritual at trial, Alan is being denied his right to name alternative suspects. Others argue, though, that you can't just throw out wild theories with no evidence at trial. So those are the things that I've found to be interesting from the trial so far. As usual, I have to say that I have no idea who killed Abby and Libby, and I truly hope that I've presented these facts in an unbiased way because all I want is for the right person to be found guilty. I found it really fascinating to see how both sides have tried to exclude evidence from the trial, but it feels to me like the defense is going harder with their attempts to muddy the waters. I truly can't wait to see if the prosecution has Alan confessing to things only the killer would know, and I'd really like to hear if his voice on Libby's recording sounds like his voice in his 60-plus confessions. Thank you to the Indianapolis Star at indystar.com for all of their detailed reporting. Because the judge is limiting courtroom access and not allowing any recording devices, good reporters are more necessary here than ever.
Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.